425-4920. Again, I'll give you that number for all you listeners, 425-4920, to call in to Voices from the Village, 7:30 to 8:30 tonight. The subject at hand, Second Harvest Food Bank. Very important these days because, as you know, welfare decapitation is getting down lower and deeper and cutting closer and closer to the bone. And though we hear lots of rosy stories from the paper, the realities are significant increases in food lines, significant increases in evictions, significant increases in numbers of homeless people in big cities. I was talking to Portland. We may hear that interview later today. And things are not looking good. So let's consider tuning in, 7:30, 8:30, Channel 71, Voices from the Village, 425-4920. And don't forget those Beach Flats guided tours at 426-3026 and 423-0170. If you have anything you want to put on Free Radio Santa Cruz that might interest me on my Bathrobus Pierre's Broadsides show, which is every Sunday at 11 in the morning and every Thursday at 6 in the evening, you can give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. HUFF is the name of Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, a very honorable homeless rights organization which has been responsible with others for producing, among other things, Karen Gillette's free meal, for opening up the River Street shelter so that it actually became a real project, for ending the harassment of food servers, for protesting the downtown ordinances successfully so that police harassment backs off, supporting programs like Cop Watch and Host Watch and Court Watch, concerned with abuses among the police, the so-called hosts, and the courts. HUFF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which kept the Coral Street Open Air Shelter, a campground, going, along with SOS, Save Our Shelters, the group of campers in 1995 in the fall. Good group. Give a call to 423-HUFF, and we also are relying on them to forward anything you say so it can be played on the air if you'd like. So if you have announcements to make relevant to civil rights, if you have a criticism of this show, if you have praise for my wonderful treatment of all these topics, hey, 423-HUFF is the number to call. Also happening today, as dedicated historians know, and probably at the town clock even as we speak, is a protest commemorating the dead from Hiroshima, Japan. Hiroshima, of course, is where the first atom bomb was dropped by some of our mothers and fathers, or maybe our grandmothers and grandfathers, probably grandfathers. I'm sorry, mothers are not allowed to drop bombs in World War II. And if you were black, you probably didn't have too much to do with it either, since they didn't allow blacks in combat roles until, I guess, late in the war. Maybe they were allowing black pilots there in those days, I'm not sure. Anyway, this was the day they fried, seared, scorched, smoked, and burned to a complete crisp, even to a shadow, tens of thousands of innocent civilians in Hiroshima to prove a point. And some would say it was to frighten the Russians with Truman's post-war power. I read a very good science fiction story about that wonderful story called The Lucky Strike, which is an alternate history story. I recommend to all of you science fiction fans, The Lucky Strike. It's a story about what would have happened if the plane that bombed Hiroshima, I'm not sure, I know the bomb was either called Fat Boy or this, they all had strange titles, the names of these planes. If the plane that had bombed Hiroshima had somehow not been able to make it and the alternate pilot had to go, what might have happened if he had refused to bomb Hiroshima or dropped his bombs in the bay? And it's quite a story. It's called Lucky Strike, and it's in a volume in the Santa Cruz Library called Alternate Histories, for those of you who like to consider what might have happened if history had happened differently, which I always find a fascinating subject. Anyway, it's Free Radio Santa Cruz you're listening to here, and you're about to hear a song by Weird Al, who is going to be singing about Hiroshima Day, although perhaps he doesn't know it. Weird Al Yankovic. Stay with us.
a mess. Lots of them suffering from trench mouth and gum disease. At least they don't have to worry.
You know, I think that was the wrong song, but only my producer knows for sure. We'll try and find the right song, or perhaps determine that that was the right song. But let's hear from Larry Milligan in San Diego next.
We're on the line. It's August 1st in the morning. We're talking to Larry Milligan of Urban Safari, and I guess working with the People's Establishment down in San Diego, a protest that has been at the San Diego City Concourse since mid-March, was kind of depleted by police in early July, and now is continuing to struggle onward. What's happening, Larry?
Well, we're still trying to keep the thing alive. You know, the police came in, tried to break the will of the homeless. You know, you're continually trying to do that throughout the state of California, mm-hmm. and throughout the United States, by the way, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Ultimately, the question will have to be asked, you know, where can people sleep that's legal?
Mm-hmm.
And they came in at 6 o'clock in the morning, and they woke everybody up. There was about 240 people camped there.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, you have 45 minutes to leave. Well, at first, they said 10 minutes, but they kept delaying it.
Mm-hmm.
We had meetings with the police 3 days before that. And the police had said at that time they were going to begin practicing zero tolerance,
mm-hmm.
which meant, you know, any kind of drug use, any kind of fighting, open containers, that kind of stuff, you know, basic stuff.
But they didn't tell you they were going to give zero tolerance to things like sleeping and breathing and eating, right?
Well, I had asked the police captain directly, Captain Mahey. I said, does that include baggage? And does that include sleeping, that zero tolerance? And he said, no. And I said, well, I need to know something. I can tell the homeless community when we leave this meeting, that's concrete. And he said that we won't do anything as far as baggage and sleeping goes.
Because indeed that's an issue, I guess, coming up in court on August 10th in a suit by Streetlight activist and writer Forrest Kuro.
Forrest Kuro isn't doing that suit. It's Roger's name's on it.
Oh, Roger Scott, yes.
It's not just Roger that's bringing it. It's the whole homeless community that's bringing it.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And so the police, that police chief who talked to you apparently was in error or not telling the truth?
Well, no. Essentially, what he said, we will make sure there's flyers up and a 24-hour to 48-hour notice given before we take any baggage or before anybody's asked, before anybody's told they can't sleep there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
He gave 45 minutes notice was given.
So their notice was not 48 hours, not 24 hours, but 45 minutes.
So essentially what you were doing is you were trying to discredit the leadership of the homeless.
And this was back on July 18th?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what's happened since?
Well, we've tried to keep it alive at the concourse. You know, they've Miss Saigon opened down there. You know, there's a theater down there right in the middle of the concourse.
Mm-hmm.
And they got half the concourse. They got a fence right down the middle of it.
Mm-hmm.
Half of it's supposedly a business zone, and the other half is public domain.
Uh-huh.
So what we're doing down there is we're having our protest and trying to keep it alive, and the police are playing their game, saying, don't take your hand off your baggage, you're ever going to take it.
Uh-huh.
And of course, in 1989, I think it was 89, the California Supreme Court ruled that if you have a bag, that's your home, you're homeless.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to have a warrant to search it. So we've been trying to tell the police that. You can't stop people from, if they're homeless, from practicing the First Amendment by threatening to take their bags away from them.
And what has the police response been to this?
You're listening. They're saying, well, you know, if you take your hands off your bags, then we're going to take them because we don't want to build up a baggage here at City Hall anymore. This is a place where the City Council conducts business. So we're saying, well, let them conduct business and get a safe site somewhere, or a shelter.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, how much property have the police taken from homeless people so far?
Quite a bit, yeah.
How much would you estimate that is? Like hundreds of bags, dozens of bags, six bags?
Dozens of bags. They came in and a lot of guys, they woke people up at 6, but as you know, Robert, at 6, for some homeless, it's late. They get up like at 5, and they go do the GR stuff, a work project's going on, and then other guys will watch the stuff, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So when the police came in, like these guys weren't even there. So they took their tools, and some guys had some meds in their bags, and they said they took it down to the impound, you know. But the problem is that it was Saturday morning, and the impound didn't open until Monday morning. You understand what I mean?
Were the people able to reclaim their bags on Monday or not?
Some of them, yeah. But they did more than that. They took a bunch of protest signs, and they tore the protest signs up. They threw candles away, that kind of stuff, okay?
Wow. So that seems to be a direct assault on the First Amendment.
Of course. Of course. They're denying that they did some of that, but there's witnesses that they did, okay?
Uh-huh.
We saw it all. We saw it all coming down.
And they're also apparently now stopping protesters who are there from sleeping and trying to interfere with their eating, right?
Well, yeah, Food Not Bombs has been coming down. They're being threatened with arrest now.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, a couple of nights ago, they served down there, and they had about 150 people milling around waiting for Miss Saigon to start. Theater goers?
Mm-hmm.
So they were all watching it, and so I kept yelling, hey, look, they're taking away the sustenance, you know? They're taking away people's...
They're stealing the soup, as we used to say in San Francisco.
Stealing the soup. And so about 100 people walked over and said to the police, what are you doing?
Uh-huh.
The police had dropped the buckets, you know?
Well, I understand last night they had another raid, but this time they were canny enough to stop Food Not Bombs before they got to the concourse. Now, I don't know, I haven't actually talked to San Diego Food Not Bombs, but...
David Lee was the guy to talk to.
Right, I understand that...
And I don't know the full story because I haven't talked to David.
Right, well, that's sort of what they did in San Francisco. San Francisco police were notorious for barricading and kind of blockading food from coming in. They didn't want people to see them stealing the food under the media spotlight, so they did it off to the side.
Yeah, but it's amazing. When people are watching, they don't do it.
Right, of course. Well, that seems...
When 100 people walked over and said, what are you doing? They just let the food go and let the people serve it.
It's kind of like sewer rats or imps of hell sort of thing.
Right, yeah.
They run from the light when they're engaging in behaviors that offensive to basic common human decency.
Yeah, right.
How many folks, have folks been staying there and sleeping, or have they just been vigiling? And
according to an ACLU document, what we can do is we can close our eyes to pray and meditate and rest.
Mm-hmm.
Now, rest is open to interpretation according to these guys, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Rest means sleep. To some people, rest means just closing your eyes but not be asleep. You know, you can run the whole gauntlet of the thing, with the games, you know what I mean? But I think you sleep. But if you can't sleep, they'll wake you up, and if you refuse to leave, they'll arrest you.
Now, under what law, ordinance, court order, or fancy of the officer's mind will they be arresting you if you fall asleep, let's say, but you're not blocking the sidewalk and you don't have many baggage with you? If you fall asleep, what specific ordinance are they using to arrest people for that?
647I.
Oh, that's the state code against lodging?
State code, that's camping. And 647J is illegal lodging.
I see.
And so that's what they'll use. But the thing is, the police cannot make the arrest. Like the security of the concourse themselves have to make a citizen's arrest. And then the police will come in and take them to jail and book them, okay?
Has that ever happened?
Yeah, I've been arrested down there a couple years ago, three times.
No, I mean in this particular protest.
No.
You were arrested before on this charge, but it's surprising that people will not, you know, that they haven't done it so far.
Well, what's going on here are two things. They're hanging the idea of taking people's baggage over their heads so the homeless won't protest.
Uh-huh.
They're very afraid, and I don't blame them, for going down there and protesting. Because they got no locker space for their bags, so they have to bring their bags with them.
Well, this is a very costly solution to the city. I mean, you know, putting in lockers would be much cheaper than paying all those cops to wander around. And
that's what we're talking about right now with the city.
Yeah.
And next week, in fact, there might be a proposal put together of putting new lockers in, okay?
Uh-huh.
That's a solution that a police captain has recommended to the city.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I get tired of taking these people's bags, and I don't think the homeless... problem is a police problem, he said.
But they can't sleep inside the lockers, can they?
No, they can't sleep inside the lockers.
So that means they want their baggage out of sight, and I presume they want the homeless out of sight at night, too, but they don't want to acknowledge that they're human beings and need a place to lie down.
That's what the ordinance is all about anyway. I mean, that's what the ordinance is for the not being able to serve in the open food, is to keep the homeless hidden.
Right, well, the ordinance is, there are no real ordinances around that food serving, except for dealing with food facility permits. That's what we found when we did Food Not Bombs in Santa Cruz and then later in San Francisco.
San Diego does have one.
Oh, really? What does that ordinance say?
It says it's an ordinance against, ready for this, I love this term, congregate feeding.
Mm-hmm. Really?
What does that mean, congregate feeding?
Amazing. Is it a city ordinance?
I don't know, man. You know, I...
Well, I'd
like city, to... City ordinance, right.
Let me jump back to your own situation. When did you first become an activist around this issue, Larry?
1991.
Give us a little of your history on this and how things have been going in San Diego since 91.
Well, I started out, I was laying in a park one day reading a book and I went to sleep. And suddenly I woke up, I was kind of kicked awake, and I looked up and there was a police car over my head, right? And two officers got out of the car and he wrote me a ticket for sleeping. It's in the middle of the afternoon. I said, what are you doing? I mean, it was just disgusting. So, and then I got another one a couple of days later. And so I bought them, okay? Mm-hmm. And I went, and at that time they had guard dogs in the food line at St. Vincent de Paul.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just gave a speech. And I said, you know, and I took the ticket to the city council, and then I started organizing a protest.
This is all in 1991?
1991, yeah, we began that. We're trying to get an amnesty on them. We have ultimately got an amnesty, okay?
When did you get that amnesty?
Huh?
When did you get that amnesty?
1992.
Oh, good. And how many tickets did that cover?
$8.7 million.
Wow.
The city manager's office was so embarrassed to get the statistics that they didn't release the full statistics until 2 days before the vote on the amnesty.
And so there was an amnesty, but did that also include a moratorium or just a past amnesty?
Tried to get a moratorium. What happened is they were so embarrassed by it that it went for about like a few months where they weren't passing very many tickets down. Because, you know, they didn't want any more light being brought on it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, when nobody was looking, then of course you started passing them out again, you know?
So for a period of time, you were able through public protest to get an amnesty on tickets that had been passed out. Had that been in the middle of a crackdown, or were the police just doing business as usual?
Oh, it was in 91 and 92 in San Diego. It was a continuous crackdown on the homeless.
And what was the motivation for that? Some redevelopment scam?
Yeah, redevelopment. Yeah, they were building Horton Plaza downtown. It was in the Gaslamp District where they put all the jazz bars. And they were tearing down all the SRO housing and stuff that was down there.
Mm-hmm.
And the old hotels and stuff. So, and so they had people, there were senior citizens were thrown out in the streets. It was terrible.
Mm-hmm. And I take it those people are still in the streets, or with some measures provided for them?
Well, some of them had found measures. Some of them died in the streets. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Some of them, are still out there.
Did homeless organizing continue after 92?
Well, homeless organizing has continued since 91, you know.
And what has happened since then?
The mayor created a city task force on the homeless, which I was a member of, and then an advisory board. But they were just show. It was like the people, like it was becoming a big issue in the city of San Diego. And so, like, the mayor needed something for show. So the task force were developed. But in fact, they were developed to get in the way, not necessarily to accomplish anything. You know what I mean, Robert?
Oh, yeah.
That's what took place.
Okay. And what about homeless organizing? Did a union of the homeless form, or are there organizations now, like I guess you have a group called Urban Safari, and the protesters themselves formed a group called the People's Establishment? And
but that's all changed now. Okay, it changes. Like you have an organization, then that will lead into something else. Like it started out with Habit in 91, the Forrest and I organized, and then it
that's Forrest Kuro, now the editor of Streetlight and one of the protesters?
Right, and
and Kuro is his partner?
Well, there's a number of people, okay?
Uh-huh.
A lot of homeless guys. I really like Habitat. That was a very special, special group.
What was the name of that group?
Habitat. H-A-B-I-T-A. Uh-huh.
Habitat?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And that was a very special group. And but we did a lot of stuff around that time. And there was a lot of homeless involved in that group where we had a roving campsite.
Uh-huh.
And to get our flyers made, what we would do is, guys get plasma. Because they just donate some change in a can, and that's how we got our flyers done.
So you literally...
The blood money, man.
Stand with the blood of the homeless.
Right. Uh-huh. But it worked. And then what we would do is, we would get our what do you call it? What do you call it when you get your food at the end of the month?
We call it, your food stamps?
No, not food stamps. What if I get cheese and commodities.
Uh-huh.
We would get our commodities, and then we had a communal refrigerator. And we put it all together, and then it was for everybody. You understand?
Oh, yeah.
That's how we began organizing.
Like, and that's sort of is what you do now. You do a lot of work in food lines, right?
Oh, yeah. There's four food lines in the city right now that the homeless themselves created.
Uh-huh.
And in fact, even the police have to admit they're the most orderly food lines in the city.
And are these lines that you work in, or?
Oh yeah, I've been working in for quite a while. I'm just a caretaker, you know, person. I got a lot of publicity down here for a while, and a lot of people got to know me.
And indeed, you are famous for fasting to open up 24-hour restrooms around December, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. But there's a lot of support for that too. I was just like a catalyst, that's all, okay?
And that's still going on? Those restrooms are still open?
Yeah, in fact, we just got 2 years of funding for them.
Now, that's great. Well,
that's great, I agree.
Now, what do you see as...
Hey, it should be normal.
It should, yes. It'd be nice if you could send up one of those restrooms for us in Santa Cruz.
Yeah, hey, I wish I could, guys. I'd send them up 24 hours, no problem.
Well, I understand that at the concourse there was some support for our Don't Sleep Tonight night, which we had here in Santa Cruz.
Yeah, a lot of people. I was part of that. And
that was last month?
Yeah, so much.
We also had to do it last night again for a second time.
Yeah.
Were you down at the
concourse? Yeah, I was down there last night.
And what happened? Give us an update.
There wasn't a lot of people, but there was a few. Like I say, the homeless are very afraid to go into the concourse right now because of the police raid, okay?
Uh-huh.
But there was a few. You know, there's about 20 people, okay?
Right.
And before that, there was a lot more than that, okay?
Uh-huh.
Are you guys coming up there, man, on your sleeping stuff?
You're putting us to shame, at least in terms of people trying to do something. We are, you know, simply kind of operating out of our houses. Homeless people themselves are not too much involved in this.
Really?
Yeah, we tried to do a repeal of the sleeping ban through a legal initiative, and we fell short in our number of signatures. We needed really about 6,500, or actually 3,800, 3,700 specifically, but we need overflow.
Yeah.
That didn't happen, so we're thinking of doing a second round. In the meantime, we're talking about a sleeping ban summit and negotiating with the council members, but, you know, it's...
I'd like to be part of that summit, okay?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. You and other people throughout the state who are facing the same problem. So
any support you might need for that, please let me know.
I will. We're talking, by the way, to Larry Milligan of Urban Safari, an activist in San Diego.
Is just somebody learning how to serve.
Who is serving homeless people and hopefully serving it directly to the city council. I hear the city council now plans to remove the public comment period till the end of the agenda so as to penalize those... Who maybe people should bring in their backpacks, unroll them, and go to sleep in the city council. I think that'd be an excellent thing.
You know, the homeless are the ones that got put to the front of the thing a few years ago, in 92.
Really? Because they didn't want them to have to sit through the whole council meeting because it was too embarrassing for the council?
That's true. This is true, Robert. You got it.
Let them sabotage themselves, put it at the end of the agenda, and then just, you know, whip out your bags. That's my suggestion.
Well, what happened is the homeless would be in there, and they'd wait through the whole council session. They had nowhere to go anyway. I mean, you know. So we just wait there and go to sleep. You're right, Robert. That's what happened. And so a guy named John Hartley got said, let's just have it at the beginning of it and just get rid of it all.
Right.
And now what's happened is there's a lot of comment now about the homeless stuff because of what happened to the concourse. And the mayor doesn't want to hear it, so now she's recommended moving it to the end.
Have there been any arrests for sleeping in the last month or two that you know of?
There's been some arrests, but not at the concourse.
I see. So in a way, it might be appropriate for people to just lie down and wait to get arrested at the concourse for sleeping. If I come to town, I'll volunteer to do that.
We're considering doing that, okay?
Yeah, but of course, I'm likely that all the time is limited, but I hope you guys do something. I mean, it's not that I recommend going to jail necessarily, but I think that if they're wary of doing it, you should, you know, at least one or two test cases might be helpful, and if people really want to push it, they can push it too.
What we were considering is doing some more stuff at the Naval Training Center, too.
I know the Naval Training Center, of course, was the area that's supposed to have been provided under the McKinney Act to be accessible to homeless people as abandoned military property.
That got amended by Congress.
It was amended, but again, I get the deal that was done by the mayor, supposedly providing money to charities, never got to the homeless, right?
1.9 million. Hey, but you know something? Those papers haven't been signed yet, I found out.
Sure.
The other thing I found out is that needs the approval of HUD to take place. HUD hasn't officially approved that yet.
So this whole thing is still sitting around while people are outside getting harassed by the police because they have no place to sleep at night.
I was told by someone in the city, okay, and it's a source. I can't tell you who it is. I'm sorry, Robert.
Oh, yeah.
That if 1,000 people went into the Naval Training Center mm-hmm. and stayed, the police wouldn't touch them.
Wow.
Because the cost of the arrest would be so outrageous.
Oh yeah. Well, I think that may well be true, and also it's a good place for them to be. It's out of the way of is it out of the way of the downtown?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. They got big kitchens out there and everything.
So what is their beef? It's really hard to understand. It's like these lords of the manor want to not only just remove them from the downtown, they want to remove them from everywhere, and they got all this vacant property. It's really kind of disgusting.
Well, the thing is is the more I've gotten into it, the more I've seen that they want to hide the homeless more and more because it's becoming a completely oppressed class.
Let me ask you this, Larry. When the homeless were driven away on July 18th from the San Diego concourse, where there were 200 or 300 of them sleeping every night, since March, where did they go? Where are they now? Where did they sleep last night?
Well, the police said they gave them a couple locations they could go to where it would be safe, I say, okay? But then when all the publicity went off, they swept those places.
So where are they now? Just
scattered around. They come through the concourse and talk to us in our protest.
Uh-huh.
They come through and talk to us, but they won't kind of they won't hang around, you know what I'm saying? And I can't blame him. I mean, that's
bad. And that was activist Larry Milligan speaking a few days ago in San Diego by phone, talking about the protests down there by the People's Assembly, which is a spontaneous group of homeless people who are continuing night after night to vigil at the downtown City Hall Concourse City Center area in order to dramatize how poor people are treated in San Diego, and hopefully to make a change in that. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. We're the free station. We don't charge you. In fact, we invite you to come and tell us what you're thinking and to use us. It's a give station. We give. And hopefully we can also take, too, if you've got some stuff worth listening to. If you find anything on this particular program interests you or you want to respond to any of it, give a call to 423-4833. We're going to be following the Beach Flats redevelopment plan in greater detail probably on Sunday at 11 o'clock when we'll hope to get an update from some of the critics of the Beach Flat. And as I said before, we'll hope to be able to persuade a few of those bashful supporters to come forward and speak their piece so you can actually hear what's going on. Here's an oldie I bet you haven't heard for at least 50 years, or perhaps you have, but it was popular 60 years ago.
Times have changed, and we've often rewound the clock. Since the Puritans got a shock when they landed on Plymouth Rock. But today, any shock they would try to stem, instead of landing on Plymouth Rock would land on them. In olden days, a glimpse of stocking was a look down at something shocking. But now God knows anything goes. Good authors too, who once knew better words, now only use four letter words, writing prose. Anything goes. The world has gone mad today, and good's bad today, and black's white today, and day's night today, and most prize today, the women prize today. Silly gigolo. So though I'm not a great romancer, I know that you're bound to answer when I propose. Anything goes. When grandmama, whose age is 80, in nightclubs are getting matey with gigolos. Anything goes. When mothers pack and leave for father because they decide they'd rather be tennis pro. Anything goes. If driving fast cars you like, a low bars you like, a man limbs you like, a man west you like, or me a trust you like, to my last tonight, nobody will oppose. When every night the set that's smart is indulging in nudist parties in studios.
that's enough of that. That one doesn't go in this program. We didn't quite finish Larry Milligan's interview, the man from San Diego. We're going to do that now. And then we're going to switch back to Santa Cruz and check things out on our own Pacific Avenue. I was going to say Pacific Garden Mall, but I'd hardly call those scrawny, pseudo-Christmas-lit trees part of any kind of garden anymore. So let's finish up with Larry Milligan here on Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3. Stay with us.
So you have a hearing coming up on August 10th. I know you also were concerned yourself about making sure when a food line is shut down that you'd be allowed to feed on federal property if necessary.
Well, we got one other location we're looking at. It's Catholic Charities, and we're meeting with a bishop, and if he can't get us an approval to do it there, then we're going to have to go to the federal courthouse.
But are the police interfering with food lines other than apparently at the City Hall concourse?
No, right now. They were a while back, but when some of that got some publicity, the people have a thing about cops interfering with food lines, okay?
I would hope so.
Yeah, they got a lot of phone calls, and they backed away, okay?
Yeah.
But they keep trying.
Is there a place where people can reach you, Larry, if they want to provide support?
My number is 424-7857.
Area code 619?
Right, and my address is 24. What's that, Joanna? Area code 619, yeah. And the address is 2422 Palm Avenue. And that's San Diego, California, 92154.
2422 Palm Avenue, P-A-L-M?
Yeah.
And if you miss that address, we're talking to Larry Milligan, the urban safari activist since, for the last 8 years in San Diego. You can give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and we'll give you that address.
Yeah.
And what kind of support are you looking for?
I don't know. You know, I got a couple ideas. Of course, I got the food line stuff. Just people writing letters. Maybe we ought to go to Washington, Robert.
Well,
camp across from the White House, huh?
That's. I think there already is a camp across from the White House.
Is it going on right now?
Well, you know, I haven't been in touch with them, but I hear that there's an ongoing vigil there.
And
I don't know. I don't know for sure if it's still continuing, but it was. I think it was called Phase 2 or Delta 2 or...
Really?
Yeah, it had some sort of similar name. Thanks for the interview, Larry.
It's a pleasure.
Pass this on to our Free Radio Santa Cruz audience. And again, if you want more information, call 423-4833 and I'll put you in touch with how to contact Larry Milligan, how to provide letters of support for the homeless to the mayor of San Diego. And hopefully with the support from homeless across the country and across the state, or maybe even just across the city in Santa Cruz, we can put pressure on these people because,
yeah.
You know, you have taken the lead, you guys down there have taken the lead in doing something dramatic and persistent to make sure that the issue does not fall by the wayside.
I think ultimately what's going to have to happen is there's going to have to be a coordination among activist leaders in the state and with the support of the homeless and some kind of effort to put together that will happen at the same time. That will get a lot of state publicity on the tickets I'm talking about.
All right.
Reaping stuff. And that's how come I would like to be part of that summit, okay?
Definitely.
That can be a very, very powerful tool, that summit.
Well, I appreciate your talking, Larry, and thanks for the interview.
Thank you, Robert.
This town puts up decorations. About hunger. If it's an ocean.
Person here around Santa Cruz. It's about August 3rd at 25 to 7 Highland Star.
I got kicked out of my camp. Some lady ranger saw me coming off my foot trail onto the main trail, and I had just been feeling at home after a year and a half there, so it was like Mr. Bluebird on my shoulder, la-di-da, and I wasn't being careful, and so she saw me, and there was nothing I could do about it, and I was all peaceful, gentle, nonviolent. I asked for my ID, so I showed my ID, and then when I left and I came back later that day, there was a note on my camp. She had gone through all my personal possessions, stole over $600 worth of my camping gear, which now she says she's going to give back, and she's just holding it in safeguard keeping. But had ransacked my home, basically had trespassed on my private home, broken and entered, thievery, and she caused me such emotional trauma and psychological tribulation that it makes me feel suicidal. And so she's a murderer and an assassin. Not just personal on her, I mean, it's her job to be a murderer and an assassin by torturing God's innocent children who are living simply and humbly upon the earth in harmony with nature.
Little Star, when did this happen?
This was just like 2 or 3 days ago.
And how long had you lived in this place?
A year and a half.
And was this camp a big mess? Were you burning down the environment, creating large messes and problems?
No, see, it was my home. Just like everyone has a trash pail under their kitchen sink. So like I could go and break and enter and trespass on someone else's home and go in and say that they were littering and that the plants had been disturbed. Like she charged me with 4 charges. Illegal camping, which means denying my constitutional rights of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, not to mention that nature or Mother Earth provides all creatures the right to exist, not to mention that the creator of the whole universe says we should share the whole thing with love. And they don't let you, in this country, United States, they don't let you even earn your money in a simple, humble way. They harass innocent people who are vending on blankets their own arts and crafts, yet they won't let us live for free, so they torture us incessantly. And my camp was my home, so like...
That was the first charge. What were the other 3 charges?
Oh, other charges were disturbing plants and disturbing geological, foundations.
Well, apparently she should have charged herself with disturbing human beings, right? But she didn't.
Right, precisely.
She failed to write herself a ticket. Maybe we should do a citizen's arrest.
Right, there's a...
So when do you go to court? Are you actually, I guess
yeah,
the tickets haven't come to
her. She said she's going to turn it into the district attorney, and it could end up in court and warrant and all that kind of scary stuff.
In the meantime, she's stolen all your property.
Well, some of it. Yeah, $600 worth of camping gear, which made it difficult. But she said I could clean up, you know, and get rid of my property. But a lot of that was my headlamps, flashlights. So how can I see at night in order to, you know, be there to
have some sandwiches,
clean up? And as far as the disturbing the plants and the geological foundations, if you wipe out nature to build a city, if you're standing on concrete and asphalt, see, I didn't destroy the nature and create a city, concrete and asphalt there. Now, the trees were all up. I didn't chop down any live trees. If they fell due to the storms, then I would...
Yes, but were you making money? That's the real question.
No, I was living in peace and harmony, and love is the true currency.
I'm afraid that doesn't serve here in Santa Cruz. Thank you very much. We're in front of New Leaf Market talking to
Gabriel Ryan.
Gabriel, you're removing items from a shopping cart. What's this all about?
Well, I travel a lot, and I deal with high-tech technology. And I'm just trying to get my business and my band together so I can move along. I borrow the shopping cart. Where I come from, that's legal, just as long as you bring it back. He told me to bring my stuff over here and get it out, or he's taking me to jail.
Who told you this?
Two police officers. I didn't get their names or badge numbers. I'd, like, report them.
How long ago did they tell you this?
About 5-10 minutes ago.
So this is a New Leaf shopping cart market, or no, Zanato's?
Oh, I got this here. You'll find it here and I'll be gone in another city.
So how long have you been in town?
Like 2 days.
Any hassles for sleeping or any other hassles by police?
Definitely.
Tell me about that.
They tell you you can't lay down on the sidewalk even if you're like deadly tired from not drinking or eating in 3 days.
Anybody else hear any problems with hassles for sleeping in Santa Cruz? Camping tickets, things of that sort?
I just want to say something.
Sure.
In defense, the reason I think that he got caught by the cops is he was walking down the road and he almost like poked out some little girl's eye by mistake. And they were concerned about that.
Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's accurate. It's like I use this as self-defense.
It's a stick, yeah.
Yeah, it's just traveling material. I don't use it as a weapon. And I keep my cart over the side where people can walk by it safely. And they weren't aware of what they were doing. They were just like shopping. It wasn't their fault.
Well, sorry about all this.
Good luck. It's like every time a tourist comes into town, I don't care if it's jaywalking, vagrancy, or having a shopping cart full of supplies, they want to take you to jail or give you a ticket or citation.
You mean if you're informally dressed or just anybody, whoever it happens to be?
Just anybody, but mostly tourist, traveler, hippie people.
Thank you. Good luck.
Have a nice day.
We're talking to Madcap Mark, puppet man and social commentator down here on Pacific Avenue. It's about 7:30 on August 3rd. Hi, Mark.
Excuse me?
Hello.
How's it going?
You're telling me that on Friday night you had an unusual encounter with somebody who didn't like the color of your puppets?
Yeah, kind of a racial thing with the I had like a black or Haitian looking puppet and a little Mexican girl. And some guy didn't like that fact. And he was like using the N-word, you know, the word
nigger, folks.
Like racial slurs. Then he turned his music up louder than me, you know, like trying to intimidate me.
His car was parked nearby?
Directly in front of me. Directly in front.
And you had a conversation with him?
Yeah. Started off, but it got derogatory, you know, with me. I wanted to get violent with the guy, but I just walked, you know.
So you had a group of people watching your puppet show. What does your puppet show usually consist of? What kind of commentary happens?
Nothing really, just kind of jokes, you know. They might take it as interracial because the Mexican girl's kind of has light skin, but I'm not going to change that. I mean, that's their problem, you know.
So you think that this guy had a sort of a, not just a supremacist or a separatist, a white aspect, but he also wanted to impose that on other people like yourself?
Oh, yeah, because my friend talked to him afterwards. He didn't know he was my buddy, and he talked to him. He started saying all this Aryan Brotherhood shit and all this stuff.
This older man, 40 years old, ponytail.
45, grayish hair, ponytail.
And you say could have been a vet because he seemed to be hobbling or somewhat crippled?
Might be a non-vet. That has nothing to do with it. He's just a sick kind of Nazi dude. Probably one of the
So that's what's happening down here on Pacific Avenue, at least was on Friday.